My guest today is Kendall Miller. Kendall, how you doing?
I'm doing really well, thanks.
Great. Welcome to my show. You've never been on it before.
No, I haven't. The first time.
I understand you're a huge fan.
All right, excellent. Yeah, absolutely.
What do you do?
So I'm the CEO of Gibraltar Software. We make two products for the .NET market. We VistaDB, which is the easiest to distribute database engine for .NET, and Loop, an application diagnostic platform.
Okay. How long have you been in ISV, independent software
yes.
vendor?
So we were founded in 2008, shipped our first product in 2009, mm-hmm. and have been doing this ever since.
All right. This is your company, right? You're the
That's
man.
That's right. Yep.
All right. Did you write the software?
Well, bits of it, but we have a whole team responsible for it, making sure it's all right, because it's way more to manage two products than you know any couple of people can do on their own.
All right. I want to talk about the challenges of being a software vendor, writing mm-hmm. and marketing your software, and what are some of the talk to me about what
sure.
some of the challenges are.
Well, I mean, there's a lot that goes into it, first and foremost. We think about just the time it takes to write the software and test the software, make sure it's all correct. Mm-hmm. And we do pretty well at managing the relationship, all the other costs in our business. But even then, all the development expenses amount to about one-third of our total cost of being a company. We also have marketing expenses and operating and all of that, which covers product support, all the sales activities, quoting activities, things like that, and then the marketing side. So in terms of the challenges, one of it is making sure that you can have all the support infrastructure for thrilled customers.
For what customers?
Thrilled customers, people that love, you know, love what you do and all love right. the product, that they're happy, that it's effective for them.
I assume that was some jargon, some industry term.
No.
It means the same thing.
No,
as
we really want thrilled customers. Yeah. You know, when we were creating the company, we looked back at the companies we admired, mm-hmm. and one of the things we knew is that those folks really were focused on, if you're not satisfied, we're not satisfied. If you're not happy, we don't want your money. We want to make sure that all of our customers are excited about the product. And the fundamental reason for that is that the best marketing is the word of mouth of satisfied customers.
Yeah.
So you just can't afford to have people not be excited about the product.
Right.
So so for us though, in terms of challenges, one is, you know, it's not just developing the application, but it's making sure that you can get the word out there. A comment I often make is that every product is the best product no one ever heard of by default. So you're always working to how can you not be that? How can you be the best product everyone knows about?
Right.
And that's the marketing side, which is always a challenge. And it's one of the reasons we spend a lot of time doing, you know, community outreach work, supporting the .NET developer community.
Like this event right here.
Like this event right here at CodeCamps. And so we're, you know, we've been supporting CodeCamps for years mm-hmm. And participating in them as well as GiveCamps and other activities that fundamentally stimulate the community of developers to be a better community of developers.
Okay.
And that gets actually back to our corporate mission. What we're really about is making developers better at building software and delivering things that just work for their user community. And that's a theme behind all of our products. So, for example, the VistaDB engine, the idea there is that it's the easiest to ship SQL Server database. All it is a single file you X-copy with your app. Can't get easier than that.
Right.
And that means that your application is easier to ship into the field and therefore run and be successful for your customers. Likewise, the Loop application, which is an application monitoring platform, we make it easy to embed, easy to use, understandable for the whole development team. So it's not just a tool for specialists. Because if we're going to make developers better, we have to make every developer better, not just a specialist on the team at diagnostics,
Got
for
it.
Example.
So you kind of alluded to this before. What you just talked about just now, these are features of the product. You've got developers are striving to make the best product you possibly
right.
can. But that's not enough.
Right.
You somehow have to convince people.
So for example, and developers are a really tough community to market to because you've got to make a product that they get passionate about enough to convince their management or whoever has the purchase authority that it's going to make a big difference and it's worth
right.
buying. And also, frankly, when you embed something into your software product, you as the customer are making a long-term commitment. You can't easily rip this stuff out
right.
Down the road. I mean, as much as we might try to make that straightforward, it's not. So consequently, you've got to earn a lot of trust in that. And they've got to really trust you and want to be willing to make a long-term commitment to your product. So for that, yeah, we spend a lot of time making sure we can earn that trust. And it's through a range of activities. So it's, you know, make a great product. Make sure that there's all kinds of tutorials. And some people love videos. Some people hate videos. So we have videos, but we also have full-up documentation. We have mm-hmm. short-form documentation and examples and samples in the shipping application. We have folks that want to get everything from NuGet, so all of our agents are on NuGet. Other mm-hmm. folks that can't use NuGet at all, so everything's in the full install. Some people need to be able to ship stuff in their corporate environment by auto deployment. Other folks never want to see an install. And you know, as a commercial vendor, you can't be too opinionated on these paths. You know, your customers, some of them will love like things one way or the other, and as often as not, you have to accommodate both and make sure it works.
So you've got a shotgun approach to both the distribution and for the education.
Absolutely, because people have very strong opinions about what they want, you know, and you're instead of trying to make them come to you, you really have to meet where they are for them to have to be wanting to adopt your product.
When you talk to people, you come to a conference like this. Have people heard of Gibraltar Software, or do you have to tell them who they are?
A lot of people have heard about us because we've been in the community a long time. They don't always know the products that we do until we talk about them and explain them a little bit. Now, some of that's sort of on us. One of the things we did last year is we renamed our flagship product from Gibraltar to Loop. And the reason is that we're Gibraltar Software, but we have two products, one of which was called our company name.
Yeah, it's a bit confusing.
And that was a bit confusing, right? So, yeah, we renamed
Hawaii
that.
I wish Hawaii would do that.
Yeah, exactly. So we renamed that. But a lot of folks, you know the VistaDB application. There was a couple years ago we actually thought about renaming that because, frankly, Vista was not the connotation you wanted to have. But that's actually now sailed to be a distant memory. Microsoft has fixed that problem for us.
Yeah. Vista became Windows 7.
Vista became Windows 7,
which
is an awesome product and has worked really well. Fortunately, we didn't call it Windows 8DB, so you know that's panned out pretty well
still
for us.
That.
Yeah, exactly. Very much so. But you know all these things take a lot of time. But we find that a number of folks have heard about the individual products and eventually pieced together who we are. But we are a small company. You know, we are right now about 12 people full-time, and we have an army of folks that support us to make us able to do what we do. But we're not a big company, and if you've heard about us, it's almost for sure because you've met us at an event or you have someone on your team who's met us at an event. And that's always that marketing angle of working to get the word out and talk more about what we do. Because frankly, every .NET team could use, for example, Loop. I mean, it's designed to drop into any .NET app and be a black box flight recorder for what your app is doing in production. So it's not just a system you have to use in development, and that's where we feel it can make the most difference. But that's that's a long message to get through to people. And as a community, frankly, it's always a challenge to get people to discover new products and fit them into their into their development pattern.
Tell me how the market has changed since you founded this company.
Yeah, so we founded in 2008, and if you think about that, that was right after .NET 3.0 shipped, actually right before 3.5 had shipped. So right about then was when we got going.
3.5 was the one with WPF and WCF.
Yeah, so all that was coming onto the market, WPF and WCF. And so you still saw Microsoft doing huge commitments to the desktop. At that time, when we first shipped, most apps were WinForms apps. I mean, overwhelmingly. And then some ASP.NET web form stuff. In fact, we didn't even call it web forms back then. It was just ASP.NET.
Right.
Now, you fast forward a couple of years from then to, say, 2010, 2011, we saw almost every one of our customers redoing web apps as well as desktop apps. I mean, people who think that WinForms is dead and gone, I will tell you what, we still hear of tons of customers right now starting new projects in WinForms. Believe it or not,
I talked to the control vendors, and they sell a
ton of WinForms. Yeah, because it's still a very effective environment for people, as is WebForms.
Right.
So that's still going on. But so the single biggest thing that we've seen has been a big change in the last couple of years has been a shift between everyone assuming that they want to acquire software to run in-house versus rent it or run it as a software as service, even in the development tool space. Now that was already starting before for business systems. But when we first went to the market with our server product, overwhelmingly people wanted to run it in-house. They felt that, hey, we have to keep our application diagnostics in-house. Mm-hmm. And that's a core part because all of our development stuff is in-house. I remember when NuGet first was available, people said, well, I can't have my build process dependent on a server out on the internet. No way. What if the internet breaks? What if we can't get to the firewall, whatever, we can't have that affecting our builds. So over just the last 18 months, we've seen a shift from selling about 3-to-1 permanent software licenses so that people would run on-premises versus subscriptions to our SaaS system to now it's reversed almost entirely, where we sell 3 times as many new subscriptions to our SaaS platform, software as a service, than we sell permanent licenses. So if you go to our site, you'll see the pricing for both, and you'll see that both are available. It's the same functionality for Loop Server, either run on your premises with a permanent license or software as a service. We run it for you, host it, and you're renting it basically as you go month to month.
And it's totally flipped over.
And it's totally flipped over in the last 18 months. I think one of the big factors is comfort. A lot of people are outsourcing things that are not their core element. And so you're seeing a lot more comfort with that than there was before. And so, for example, I think there's a big factor where they don't feel like they're going to be embarrassed if they tell the business, no, well, that doesn't run in a house. Also, I think that you see a bigger transition with folks for they no longer believe they have to host things in their own data center. Once you move off of hosting in your own data center where it's going to be in the cloud and you're renting the virtual machine, it starts to be natural. Like, well, if that's just going to be an expense, why not have the license itself being expensive. I mean, Microsoft's doing this now recently with a SQL Server. You can get a VM on Azure of a full SQL Server enterprise instance by the hour.
Sure. Office 365 is the
same. It's Office 365 same way. And so that's really changing people's perspective on should we purchase or should we rent. And so I think that's been driving a lot of it. And people are just more comfortable with it. And also, frankly, I think it's probably an easier budget discussion internally because it doesn't feel like a long-term, many-year commitment. Now, in reality, it is in effect because imagine you've embedded our diagnostic system and you've shipped your app into the wild and it's running out on whatever number of systems out there in the field. 10 to 1, as long as that version's in the field, you're going to want to keep the subscription. But it's okay. We've always been neutral on that point. You can run it either way. It's something that's a little different between us and some of our competitors in that space, is that we support both modes. But we've seen a big flip on that, and I think that's going to continue. I think that people are going to be a lot more willing to sign up for a rental of a service of something where they can say, oh, I'm not just buying the license to the software. I'm buying the actual execution of it and maintenance of it. So even an open source product, like, for example, there's a company now that's offering Elma as a service.
Elma
and,
is?
It's error logging management and handling, I think. So it's a open source, nice error manager you can drop into your .NET application that does some pieces of what we do with Loop, but it does more narrow scope of it. Mm-hmm. But it's a fine open source effort, and that's an open source product where now some folks are offering the service back end of it, so that you can subscribe to that and implement that product in your environment as a whole solution. As a service, and what they're making, what they're charging for really is that they're hosting and running it for you. In many ways, frankly, for us, if I'm looking at a customer, I really don't care if they get the Loop server because they think of us as offering that server and running it for them, and that's their justification, or if they look at it as, well, it's less than licensing the product. Because we start at $50 a month, and with the annual discount, that's actually less than $500 a year, mm-hmm. and that's less than what you'd pay to get a virtual machine to host a free application, in terms of our starting position. So it can be a very economic approach for folks. And again, we're good both ways. We sell the product as a permanent license. We sell it as software as service. We even sell an OEM edition of it that folks can use to include it in their big enterprise system that they sell. So there's a range of those options.
Yeah, that sounds like this cloud offering. The SaaS offering. It's an appealing offer for startups that really don't have a lot of capital, can't go out buy a lot of hardware, or for companies that are starting to retire hardware.
That's right.
Thinking about, do I buy a new server, or do I just change this to an expense from a capital expense?
That's right. And I think that's a great decision for companies. And if I'm a company today, like even internally on our own, because we run this software as a service platform for all these folks, today it runs on hardware we own.
Right.
Because the last time we had to buy up a lot of hardware, which was about a year ago, mm-hmm. in prep for our big release we did this year, we dramatically increased our server footprint. Those may well be the last servers we ever buy. Next time we have to upgrade and add more scale to the hardware, we may shift to a cloud provider even for the hosting of that, which it's a perfectly valid choice, and it comes down to, like any other business, we have to look at where are we best to put our capital so that it has the biggest advantage for our customers.
Right.
And frankly, there are very few companies in the world that are going to light the world on fire by their ability to host servers. And if that's not, if you're a company that offers, whatever your corporate website does, and you're not in the hosting business fundamentally, you got to ask yourself if that's how you're going to achieve competitive advantage.
And how are you going to compete against Microsoft and Amazon?
And all these guys who do.
Even if it's not just what they do, it's still a huge investment that they've made.
Absolutely.
Like Microsoft, for example, and a lot of other things.
And I think that it's very fair to say that Microsoft really has. I mean, they have a massive group of people that this is all that they do in the enterprise.
Right.
And so I think, them, as you mentioned, Google and Amazon and Rackspace, right. These guys, they have whole teams. This is all their focus. And frankly, you're not going to beat them at that game. And there's a pricing model in there that'll make a difference. I mean, the price has come down dramatically in cloud hosting in the last year, just incredibly.
Yeah. What is the, in your opinion, what's the market for ISVs? If somebody's thinking about starting their own startup.
Yeah, so if they're starting your own.
What's your advice to them?
Yeah, well, so a couple.
Is it a good time to do it?
It is a great time to do it. And I'll tell you, two reasons it's a great time to do it. One of it is, it's never been easier to find good talent at amazing rates because modern collaboration software has made it possible to go worldwide to find good talent. That's something we do. We have talent all over the world that we engage in making our products better. Mm-hmm. And this isn't enough. I'm not saying outsource the whole thing to India to develop. I'm literally saying find the best guy around who's going to be able to do X. If it's graphics for your thing or you're implementing a new technology and you want to know how to do that, that talent's available. It's available on the market in a way you can work with at a competitive rate. And that's better than ever before, which makes it a great time to do something technically. And the second reason it's a great time is that the traditional barriers that have made it only possible for larger players to afford to create software and create software companies are a lot lower. In particular, the SaaS option, where you can for a very small amount of money, let's say with a BizPark membership, which is Microsoft's program for people starting software. If you're doing a startup and apply for BizSpark. It's amazing. Not only do you get everything from Microsoft for free, but they even throw in a certain number of dollars a month of Azure credits.
Yeah, I think you get 3 years, you get everything for free.
Yeah.
And after that, then you have to pay
for it. Right. And so we were a BizSpark. We've actually a BizSpark alum now because we're old enough that we graduated the program.
I think that's the idea, is that because some startups don't last 3 years.
That's right.
It just lowers that risk. Barrier to entry is gone.
It lowers that risk, and so you can get going. And if it's a cloud provider, then what happens is, you know, frankly, they're giving you basically what it takes to host the base instance of your app. And then as the volume scales up, as you get more customers, you need to scale out. You will end up paying, but now you have revenue to complement that, and that's the key. So those two big things are a great reason why it's there to start. Now, in terms of what I also recommend to companies, I would not get into the developer tools business.
Okay.
It is a really hard business to succeed at, but there are lots of great business opportunities out there for folks to drill into. There are many underserved niches, and it's never been easier to create a product that will absolutely delight a small part of the market. And that's really what I tell folks to do. Go look for a 5% of the market that is not happy with what's available today, and create something that delights them.
Is there anything we haven't talked about we should have?
Oh, wow. There's lots of stuff we could talk about, but it's never been a better time, I think, to be an entrepreneur in software. But it's really about being smart and looking outside yourself. I would definitely look for an opportunity near you for a code camp. They are all over the U.S. They are all over the world. They may be called different things in different areas, but something that's happening all worldwide, and these are the best places, in each weekend to find folks that are passionate about software, that are passionate about entrepreneurship. There's a lot of free support out there to try out. And that would be my big advice to folks getting going. It's a great time to do it.
Excellent. How can people find out more about you and your company?
Sure. So one thing, if you want about me, the best thing to do is actually follow me on Twitter, @KendallMiller. Also, though, you can find out about our company at www.gibraltarsoftware.com or on our blog. We are hyper-friendly. You will find a chat link on the pages. You will find an email to support. If you reach out 10-to-1, you'll get me or one of the other senior folks at the company, and we love to start conversations. So it'd be great. I'd love to talk to everyone out there.
Kendall, thanks so much.
Hey, it's been a pleasure. Thanks, Dave. What's really amazing now is how you can use mobile technology to keep track of all your friends. And frankly, people that aren't your friends, or should be your friends, or could be your friends. Just keep in touch with your friends.